Meeting to order at 6:03 PM. Here. We'll call for a moment of silence, please. We stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, if we could have roll call, please.
Charlie Hopkins.
Here.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Perry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Now, has anyone signed up to speak? Seeing no one, we'll go on to written communications. I'm going to make you run now. Do we have any written communications?
We do. We received an email dated October 14th from a Tony Visser regarding the proposed conversion of gravel pit to a truck parking lot in the Hazelmere-Campbell River Valley. We received an email dated October 22nd from Kent Bailey regarding adopting the RCW allowing on-road ATVs on city streets. And we received a letter dated October 26th from BTAC regarding recommendation that city purchase Bank of America building for a welcome center.
Question?
Certainly.
Have the two on the agenda, the two emails, have they been researched and addressed at all?
So regarding the truck parking, actually our very own Sam Crawford has been looking into that. Right now, we are still waiting to hear back from Surrey's planning division, but according to the information from a Surrey City Council member, Tom Gill, there's roughly 1,300 rigs currently parking illegally in Surrey, impacting residential areas and farmland. This truck park would allow truckers to wash their rigs, change oil, tires, include washroom facilities, and he believes there'd be no impact on the Little Campbell River, which is in close proximity. And he, he did indicate that they would need to follow high environmental standards. So the letter that we got was clearly from an opponent, and we'll see what they're planning. Division has to say, and we can report at that.
And then we'll determine whether we should write a letter or not of concern.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of
thing. Exactly.
And then the second one on the ATVs on city streets. Has anybody looked into that? What is? Do you know anything?
Not that I'm aware of,
Mr. City Manager.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah, if we can just find out about what he means by that, and if we have anything in our RCWs.
How about one?
Okay. Raven, on that point of on the truck parking in Canada, is that only our issue, or is that something that the county would be interested in or have something to do with, or the state itself, or federally? I mean, who also, other than the city of Blaine, would be concerned about water contamination? Being created by Canadians. I think that's a bigger issue than the one we can address.
It's an interesting topic. The water, the surface waters from that area don't flow into the United States. So the Serpentine River, the Little Campbell River, those head north, they don't come into the U.S. So they wouldn't be something that the Department, the Army Corps of Engineers or the Department Ecology would take an interest in from that perspective. The groundwater coming our direction, there might be some interest, but I don't, I couldn't really speak to that. I don't even know who, aside from us potentially, or maybe Ecology, but would probably be stimulated by us, would have an interest.
We don't want to start a war with Canada.
But we showed concern on another project at one time and had some influence, and it was pretty well received, like a garbage dump or something. This may not be as bad as that.
Relating to that groundwater, that is exactly why we did this recent monitoring well as far north to the border as we did, and I'll report on that during my...
I think if we gather any information, and it looks like there might be an issue, but perhaps we should let our state senator know, Doug Erickson, and...
I'll make note
and
of that.
See if he, at least he's aware of it. We made him aware of it. If it becomes a larger issue, then we'll have to. The Canadians seem quite concerned about it as well. This is not an ideal project to have in their backyard. Okay, thank you for the written communications. Next is a consent agenda. We're looking for approval of bills in the amount of $606,531.59, approval of the council minutes for October the 12th, 2015, and approval of special council minutes for October the 22nd, 2015. I would entertain a motion.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions or comments?
Question, Harry.
Question.
There's a lot of bills for witnesses.
That was for a jury trial that the court held, I believe, last month.
And the city is responsible for what amount?
Paying the stipend for the jury, yes.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion is carried 7-0. Next item on the agenda is our council action items. We have one item, a professional service contract with ESC for field inventory of electrical system for GIS platform. And who is going to address that? Raven.
I'll introduce the topic. So, as you know, we've been trying to move into the new century with our technology here in Public Works and in Blaine. One of those actions has been to actually hire a full-time GIS coordinator, which hadn't been the case prior to 2012. We have been keeping most of our maps in the AutoCAD map, for lack of a better term, that we've then cut into various pieces and provide to our crews when they're doing repairs. And particularly with the electrical system, because of its complexity and because of the potential for danger, there's a concern that those maps be updated more regularly and more accurately. So the GIS is really the way to go with that, and we are recognizing, because of the time that we have been with the old technology, that we need some help getting started with the new. So that's what this contract is for. We interviewed several firms and found ESC to be the most qualified. While they are out of state, they are including at least the data collection component will be a local surveyor. And the money for the work is funded through the Electric Utility Operations Fund 401. Because we are kind of toward the end of the year and the contract won't get started till next month, we're anticipating expenditures of $15,000 this year and then the remainder in 2016. Our recommendation to council is that you authorize the city manager to sign this professional service agreement with ESC Engineering in the amount of $66,222. I will add, if there is technical questions from the council, that Jane Yearling is here, and she is much better versed in some of the technical nuances if you have any questions in that regard.
Okay, questions? I frankly didn't understand it, so. have any questions.
Well, you know, maybe briefly we can just talk a little bit about the, you know, the idea that you're, when a electrical foreman comes out or a lineman comes out to do a repair in the middle of the night, is he going to be fumbling through maps or can we open up a tablet and push a button? That's really where we're heading in our budget for next year. I've actually have two tablets for the light crew, so they have one tablet per team. And that's where we want to go. If they see something, they can actually circle it live and hand that to Janie, and she can do her magic, and poof, there it's already updated. It's updated live. I don't have to print another piece of paper, right? I don't have to worry that that piece of paper might have something missing from something 2 times ago that I reported because of the fact that just the way that paper works, right? It's just not a perfect system. So we actually see moving this way with all of our utilities, but the light utility, because it's the most complex, because it has the greatest spectrum for hazard working with electricity, we're focusing, we'll call this a pilot, if you will, program for the light fund. We have been doing something similar in-house with our water utility, working with Birch Bay Water and Sewer District for almost the whole year, right? No, not quite that long. But in any event, they've been picking up water data with our own system. This is just going to have a company whoosh, do it all at once, and get us the framework that we need to bring it into the GIS and for them to load up on the tablets. Well, that's as simple as I can.
Two questions, if I may. One, how close to fruition are we on this?
How close to fruition?
When would it go live? When would it be useful?
I think the contract, their intention was to finish the work by next March. And so by mid-year, it'll be live. That would be my goal.
Okay. Would it be appropriate for me to volunteer in my house as a test case? I just want to see sort of information that you print out, both for water and for power, for the sake of argument, having nothing better in my house.
We can sure bring out our paper maps and show you the difference between the paper map and what the GIS would show. Sure.
I'm just really curious.
You bet.
Dennis has a question.
Nope, you got it.
Okay, I have a couple questions, having knowing nothing about this. You have 15,000 this year. You have 51,000 next year. Is the 51,000 coming out of 401? Is it 401?
Yes, sir. What's happening is...
You have budgeted that for... You'll have to include that in your budget for... next year. Is that correct?
What's happening is it's budgeted this year, and because we're not going to be able to spend it all this year, our ending balance will be that much higher this year, and then we will have it budgeted for next year.
So you're going to carry it over from 1 year to the next?
As we're able to do with the type of accounting that we have, yes.
Second question is, in the system that you're building, obviously, will you have the opportunity to change it and upgrade it on your own, or do we have to bring back this firm to do it?
No, the idea, go ahead, Jane.
The whole focus of this is to be able to get our whole system up to a point where we can stay caught up, where we can do it more electronically, we can do it more efficiently. As she was saying, using today's technology, whether it be a laptop, a smartphone, heck, in 2 years it's going to be on your watch. So however it's going to be that we actually... the guys out in the field doing a change in whatever system, be able to put that in there and then get it in. So we will be able to do it more in-house once it's done.
So do you need an IT guy to do that? IT guy to do the changes? In other words, this system is going to go in place now. 5 years from now, you're going to have, it'll be out of dating. Who does the changes on a yearly basis?
Okay, so this is why we're out of date. With the CAD system, and with everything being on one desktop, there's always this handing, here's a change form, and it goes through the process, and it can get dropped into God knows where and not get updated. Going electronically, don't know what the technology and things going to be like in 5 years from now, but the concept is going electronically, when the guys are out there in the field, it is their data.
Yeah.
They should own it. If they're linemen, they want the best map. They want to be able to see the map in nighttime outages and bad rain or in the daylight, good weather. So they would be able to automatically make those changes that they're doing right there in the field. It would be reflected into the computer system. There would be a gatekeeper that says, okay, these are the things that happen in the field. Send them in. The computer does its magic, and it links up, and you're done. So we'll be able to have the updates a lot quicker.
So you'll need an IT guy to do all this.
You need the GIS guy.
Yeah.
The GIS guy. So you can do all your own updates.
He's the gatekeeper.
Now you're going to do this. You're going to do this for the entire water and electricity and
all five utilities: the electric, water, sewer, storm, and reclamation water.
Will all be on a laptop.
Right, as well as all the other your maps that you have in front of you showing the zoning, all the polygons, the city limits, everything would be in one system instead of having paper maps. They'd all be electronic, like a Google Earth, but it would be our data, our systems, our assets, so that we can better manage our assets in-house.
Okay.
So, and just to emphasize that this contract specifically is for the electrical system. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're targeting this as the first priority. And we are working to build the other system.
So is this cost for software?
No.
Basically, what is the cost?
The cost is for the data and a myriad of forms that it will come in to update our GIS. So instead of having, if you could think about it in terms of the way it is now in the CAD, it's flat. There's no base information that gives us anything other than you got a line here or approximately here because we don't have it measured in the field. And it's maybe this size. With this data, it's going to accurately show where it is in the field, and it's going to have a variety of different pieces of information that are going to go into those layers for that. So
we're paying for data.
We're paying for the data and the collection. Not software, collection of the data. That's a good part of the price.
Okay.
I think the best way to get it onto a layman's terms, we are paying for people who really know electric distribution systems. They know what is on a pole. They know what's in a vault. We want them to go out there with one of our line guys and map it, locate it, describe it, identify it, give all of its attributes. It has X, you know, KVA, voltage, whatever the heck that these guys work with, so that when the guys have their electric map, they know what's going to be in that vault cabinet before they open it. In a CAD drawing, it says there's a vault here,
right?
But it doesn't say what's in it.
Right.
CAD is flat.
So
GIS is more.
Paying them to come out and do that legwork and do that computer work and
mapping. Exactly. So no cost in software,
right.
No cost in hardware.
Right.
Just
right.
In expert industry
expertise.
Experts. Getting the data that we need into a form and a system that we need and that we can use and be able to keep it updated in a much more efficient,
right.
Much more economical way, and far less headaches between all the departments and all the
right.
Systems.
Yeah. That's
okay?
Great.
Okay.
Go.
It's going to cost us $66,000 for one of the five
utilities
we got. Is it going to be $66,000 for each for the next four?
Most likely not. You were talking about the electric distribution, the most complex, and it's also the data set that needs to be the most accurately located. By the time you get down to storm drains and things like that, there's not as much data having to be behind that. The location, you know, if you can see if it's as far away from the flag, that's great. But if you're a lineman, you don't want to be missing the boat. You don't want to be thinking it's there and it's over here and you end up cutting the line and getting electrocuted. That's
critical. I would say, you know, Jamie and Emily have been picking up the water system, so we're trying to do that internally with our own GPS. And then your other utilities, frankly, okay, there's a manifold. That doesn't mean that we're going to not strive to continue to move forward
with this, but this being not doing this for every utility.
Okay. So the big price is for the verification, the field methodology.
The collection of the data, the verification, as Jeannie was saying, to give that more depth so that we have much more information when they open up that vault or whatever it might be.
Has a motion been made?
No, I'll move that.
Motion is made.
That the city manager sign the professional service agreement with ESC Engineering in the amount of $66,222.
Do we have a seconder?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Okay, next item on our agenda is a public hearing on the 2016 property tax levy. Anyone wishing to speak on the issue will be allowed 3 minutes. An additional 2 minutes of non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. Action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. No action is anticipated. Okay. Contrary to what it says here, no action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. Okay. Who is going to introduce the 2016 property tax levy?
So just clarification that the public hearing will be continued to the next meeting.
Okay.
And that's where the action
so
will be taken.
So we will keep the public hearing open to our next meeting.
That's correct.
Over the 9th, I believe.
Okay, so the statutory limit placed on cities with a population under 10,000 in levying a property tax increase is 1%. And that's on the previous year's property tax revenue plus any value from new construction. A 1% increase on our current revenue of $1,086,000 would generate a total of approximately $10,866 in additional property tax revenue for 2016. And if we assume an assessed property value of $250,000, the city's annual property tax bill, or the city's portion, to the homeowner, the increase would be about $3.52. So currently, for every dollar of our regular property tax that's paid to the city, 18 cents goes to support general fund operations, 12 cents to street operations, 14 cents to street overlays, and then the remainder, 56 cents, pays for debt service on our current street capital bond. And the final payment on that street bond is December of 2017. And then an additional 17 cents goes to the payment on the capital bond, which was used to build the fire station on Odell Road. And the excess levy was approved by voters in 2002, and that bond matures in 2021. That's the final payment on that one. So the options for council, there would be take no increase from the previous year, or take the allowed 1% increase. There is also bank capacity. However, in talking with the county assessor's office last week, we need to anticipate next year a property tax refund that would be on certain properties where the owners have contested their assessments. And I will follow up with the county assessor to get more information on how we deal with this refund before the action on the next council meeting.
Jeff?
And any questions?
I thought we'd just ask the audience if they have any questions. Hearing none. Any questions from the council? Okay, if not, we'll stop the public hearing for the moment and carry it on to November the 9th. Anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this issue or write us a letter, the public hearing will be open and on until the end of our meeting on November 9th.
And action will be taken at that time?
Yes, action will be taken at the end of that public hearing. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, next item on the agenda is Commission, Committee, and Board reports. David, on the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Mr. City Manager.
The committee met last Tuesday and had a chance to review some of the video that was taken, I think, during the summer months. I thought that was kind of enlightening. We can make that available for the full council, I think, through either our webpage or in some fashion. But it's worth looking at. The fellow that did the work, you know, spent a week in the county visiting all those different cities and talked about what made sense and what didn't relative to economic development, tourism, downtown, revitalization. Pretty worthwhile to watch the whole thing, I think, because it gives good examples not only of what can be done differently and better in the county, but it gives real-life examples of cities who are doing that now, so you can actually see the differences. And we're still moving forward. We're going to have some budget recommendations that come in out of that committee for the council to consider as part of your 2016 budget.
Okay. Questions for David? Okay. Thank you, David. Okay. Steve, on your two committees.
No report at this time.
Okay. Bonnie, on the Blaine Chamber.
No report this time.
WTA Board, Paul.
No report.
Charlie, Drayton Harbor Shellfish. Dennis, your two committees.
The group at the Friends of the Library are now called FLIC.
FLIC?
It's for Friends of the Library Improvement Committee.
Okay, FLIC.
And they're wanting you to come and get T-shirts, if you would, please.
They're offering for you. How much are the T-shirts?
$10.
$10, okay. Big deal. Okay, how about the Senior Center Liaison?
Friday, November 6th, they're having the Spaghetti Feed and Youth Jazz Band.
Good. It's the 26th of November?
The 6th of November, tickets are $10, $5 children.
Yeah.
And you're all expected to be there.
Okay. All righty. You say spaghetti, eh? Okay, Mr. Jones, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Nice to be back. Okay, how about the Planning Commission and Park and Cemetery Board?
Not a lot on the Planning Commission. I did just want to mention to you that they recommended approval of a sewer plan and comprehensive plan amendment for extending service to a vested 26-lot plat that's in our former UGA in the Semiahmoo area. It's called the Ridge at Semiahmoo. And that was a comp plan amendment that you docketed and they've processed. So that will be coming forward in the next few weeks. And that will be an interesting one because it sort of tests the limits of GMA a little bit. And if we are appealed on that, the applicant will bear the burden of any the substantial part of the legal costs. But it'll be an interesting case if it is heard. But basically, we're extending sewer outside the city limit or outside the UGA, but it was inside our UGA when this all started. So it's
interesting.
Is that Mr. I forget his name?
Gordon Montgomery.
Yes. That's his project.
Yeah.
Right?
So you'll obviously get a full report. We'll bring all of this forward in the next few weeks. I just wanted to mention that to you. And I think you were all at the Park and Cemetery Board report.
Yeah.
Nothing more to add on that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Okay, Raven, how's the Public Works Advisory Committee doing? You don't have to get up. You just no point in getting up. Just give us a quick.
Our next meeting is a week from Thursday.
Okay. Thank you. Small Cities Caucus. Attended that meeting. There was two topics discussed. One was the jail. And Jack Laws was there. He was reporting on the criticism that he's received regarding the pamphlet that the council, or not the council, but his office put out. And a lot of people were criticizing him and saying that he was unethical and had done something immoral. And he wanted to let us know that that was taking place. And the other was a young lady, and I'm struggling to remember her name, who works for Western Washington University, and she was reporting on border traffic. And I've given David the booklet, pamphlet, that she gave us, and that might be worth passing on to everybody, at least maybe on the Economic Development Council, so they have information as to the amount of traffic. There has been a very noticeable decrease in traffic as that's tied to the Canadian dollar, so it's not as bad as one would anticipate, but there has been some slowing of traffic as a result of the Canadian dollar. Finance Committee, how are we doing, Mr. Lesnar?
No report at this time.
Okay. Whatcom Council of Governments. I didn't attend the last meeting. I think Raven and Paul did. Do you have any comments on the...
No comments other than the not budgeted for plane projects wasn't actually...
Okay, and we were happy with that.
There was a approval of the tentative budget, including the amount that had been set aside for Blaine projects.
Just for clarification, we were awarded $500,000 for Hughes Avenue Phase 2.
Were you were able to resolve the issue about next year's budget?
No, I refrained from commenting because everybody was very happy about congratulating themselves for their stepping in and making that $500,000 available, so I figured I'd save that one for next year.
Okay, so let sleeping dogs lie. Okay, North Whatcom Fire Update, Chief Hollander.
Evening, Council.
No gifts, no cookies, sorry.
Short-handed today. Share with you our chief's report for the month of October, which is all our statistics up through September. I'd like to just point out 3 points of interest this meeting. First of all, you can see our total calls for the year up to 2,894. That's over 400 calls more this year already than last year, and attribute a large part of that to the dry summer and all the fires we had there. If you flip the page, you can see I've highlighted the Blaine and Semiahmoo station responses, and that's right about where we normally are. Blaine had 69 calls, Semiahmoo had 7, and you can see the response times there. A couple of calls of interest. On September 5th, we had a mobile home fire in Birch Bay that ended up having a fatality in it. We don't see a lot of fatalities regularly. We ended up with 2 in 1 month. We also went on a logging accident up... I guess it would be east of Lake Whatcom, kind of way back in the trails. It was quite a hike back for a logger that had got injured. By the time we got him out, we got him out and alive to the hospital, but unfortunately he passed away from his injuries at the hospital. So other than that, a structure fire and an excavator fire. And with that, unless you have any other questions.
Any other questions for Chief?
Anything else? Just those would be about the highlights.
Sure.
You betcha.
Okay. Completes the commission, committee, and board reports. Department reports. Number 1, Public Works. Amtrak train stop and project updates.
Yes, sir. First, I want to point out the sunset behind us because we all work too hard not to appreciate why we work here, right? We've kind of talked about a couple of things progressing toward that were related to this project update, but I'll just start. So this Friday, Councilmember Onion and the mayor are planning on going down to Vancouver, Washington to participate in the state rail meeting, and I'll be participating by their go-to meeting phone.
So we're going to connect here middle of this week to just make sure we're all on the same page, and also a communication strategy for how we could be communicating with each other without being disruptive. So we'll figure that out, too.
Is Bruce going to this meeting?
No. Okay. Bruce is not on the meeting.
No, he's not on the advisory.
He's on the whatever the other group was.
Yeah.
But Bob Wilson is. I don't know if... I thought he said something maybe about going down the day before on the train or something, but certainly encourage you to use alternate transportation or carpool or whatever. Okay. Or sit with me in the room and go to meetings. but
no Canadian participation, as far as we know.
As far as we know. So I could update you on that. I organized a meeting, what was that, October 16th, I believe? Yes, October 16th with Jason Beloso, who is the WSDOT rail planner. He's one that sent the invitation to Mayor Robinson. And we essentially spent 45 minutes out of this hour-long meeting or so almost arguing with them about why they didn't have a Canadian presence on their committee. Their committee includes various jurisdictions, a couple of cities, includes cities in Oregon and various officials from Oregon. And for some reason, everything from here north was not, or Bellingham North was not included. The only way that we were able to get him to consent to anything is by Bob Wilson, who is with the Walk and Cog, giving up his alternate position to someone from Canada. And as of right now, I don't know who or if one of those people that he's invited will be able to attend.
He wrote to the mayors of White Rock and Surrey, mm-hmm. Asking if they or someone they to represent them would go down to the meeting or through the phone.
Yeah.
I haven't heard from them yet, but I really think it's their participation is definitely key to us getting the station stop here.
Now, that being said, we were reminded in that meeting that, you know, the purpose of this committee is not to establish a new station stop in Blaine, but to develop the final policy. And so we're dealing with someone who's very much that's what he's seeing right now. We're seeing a bigger picture, and we have definitely have made enough of a presence and enough of a force that there were even invited to the committee. It's huge. We have two votes, I guess, or however you want to look at it. But the Canadian piece being missed is definitely something that we're going to need to work on catching up from. I think that sets things back. So that's this Friday. Let me get back to my date here. I wanted to give you an update on the monitoring well. So we haven't received a final report yet, but the well construction is complete. The well does turn out to be an excellent monitoring well in that it we did capture that deep aquifer that is shared by our well field. There's also decent water in a mid-range aquifer that is also shared by some of our wells. So it's going to do exactly what we hoped in terms of monitoring any groundwater issues before they become an issue. It did not turn out as well for production. So the production rate in and of itself by itself is not enough that it would be something that would be used for any other purpose other than monitoring unless other wells were developed. So I'm waiting for the final report, and I will share that with you, maybe even by our next meeting.
Yes. One, what sorts of problems might it take up?
Any sorts. It's something that we can I don't think we're looking for anything because the water quality was determined to be excellent, and it's very difficult to impact an aquifer at that depth. We're talking almost 1,000 feet in depth. So But that being said, we will add it to our routine testing that we do on all of our wells. So it could be an indicator either at that mid-range aquifer or at the lower aquifer.
Okay, suppose that by chance the testing did reveal a problem of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
What options might we have at that point?
Well, at that point, we would call our handy hydrogeologist and say, help. No, at that point, we could be looking at whether or not we want to shut down a well or, you know, otherwise try to cut that particular transmission off, whatever it might be. Because it is so deep, it would take a lot of time to get from place to place as well.
Okay, well, for example, just as a hypothetical, suppose that lead limits were too high.
Mm-hmm.
What could we do? It seems to me as though it's nice to know, but there's precious little we could actually do.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I saw lead levels high in this well, I would immediately be testing for lead in our other wells, and it would be something where I could be more proactive. But you're right, there isn't a whole lot you could do about lead as a specific indicator. But we do have other options with other elements that we're testing for.
Could you give me a specific example?
Well, fecal coliform, for one. If fecals were encountered, we would put more chlorine in our system, and chlorine can beat the fecals.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And if you would like, I'll just offer it to you, but if you would like our consultant to come in and give you an overview of the report so you can get a little bit more of that nitty-gritty, we could certainly arrange for that. I don't want to compete with our budget calendar, though. You know, is certain.
It comes in every 2 years, every 3 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at least, that's a perfectly fine schedule.
Okay, very good. And I think we're on track with that.
Okay.
Oh, you're looking at me. So what else do I have to talk about? That's right. I was thinking it was an action item. Just a reminder of the regional meeting with AWC that's coming up this November 12th. And also to let you know that we've been requested by Dana over at the Senior Center to come in and talk to her about budgetary items that the Senior Center needs. I've also been similarly contacted by Debbie Farmer. My intention is to try to get that coordinated so that we're able to address those facility needs as a part of our general fund budget recommendation to you. And that's all I have.
Raven, does that AWC meeting require an RSVP?
For the regional meeting, it requires registration. It's, I think, $45.
Okay.
It includes dinner.
And you're going? Is anybody
hoping to go.
You're going?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm going too. I haven't registered yet, though, so I need to do that.
I haven't registered either, but I think I'll go. Yeah.
It's an amazing opportunity. I'm sitting on the AWC Education Committee, I got to actually sit next to him. He's the former director, national director of the American Public Works Association. So I just kind of took that opportunity, and it very inspirational fellow. So if I don't go, I do think that it won't be a waste of your time.
It's pretty rare they come all the way up to Bellingham.
Yeah.
So it's a good opportunity.
Absolutely.
So if you want to go, sure you find out how to register.
Yeah, I think it's on your. Mine was on my phone.
We got an email about a month ago, I think, saying how to do that. I've got to look that up and do that tomorrow.
Would you like me to forward that to you, Mr. Mayor?
Can I do it?
Yeah.
Me too. Just so I don't have to look for it.
Okay, Community Development Services.
So this is a little bit off track, but going back to what Raven was just talking about, it seems like in a different life, a long, long time ago, I was involved in some projects in California related to groundwater contamination and that sort of thing. And one of the really important things about those types of wells is that what they do is give you time to answer your question, which is that, for example, if it takes 3 years from the water in that well to migrate across the aquifer and get to the wells we're actually drinking from, you have 3 years to figure out what are we going to do, and it might be close that well, it might be drill new wells, and they were dealing with that in Sacramento County when I worked there, and we were involved in some of those projects. So that to not have the answer is perfectly reasonable, but to find out all of a sudden the water coming out of the tap is contaminated is really bad.
Yeah,
you want to know before that happens. I just wanted to give you a really brief report about downtown development and just to kind of give you a sense of some of the things that are happening. And what is happening for the most part is happening right behind me here on Martin Street. We have three development projects that are active. Two of those are Doug Dahl's project, which he's been working on pretty slowly. Doug's a single one-man operation for the most part on building those buildings. But as you can see now, they're being painted, and the outsides will at least be all weathered in, and he'll continue to move along. Just a reminder on those, one of those is a single-family residence, and one of those is a commercial property, being like an office space. The three-story one is the single-family residence. Silver Stag Knives demolished the building that was in front of their production facility and has a permit active now. They just poured the foundation, and the first floor concrete, I noticed today, is in for a three-story building there that will be primarily offices and retail space. I'm sure they'll do their distribution out of there because they ship boxes by UPS, so they don't do big shipments, but they ship boxes, and we do expect most likely they will actually have an open retail facility on the ground floor that'll it'll be small, but it'll the people that are in the office working will be able to sell knives at a display counter, which will be nice. If you've never, you've probably all seen those knives at one point or another, but they're really interesting handcrafted knives made right down the street here. So those are the three construction projects that are currently active. We don't have any other permits in for anything substantial like that. Goff's, of course, was just a demolition permit to take the facade off, and we approved that we waived design review on that demo permit just because they were bringing out the old building there. And it's interesting to note that building as it stands, what you see exposed, which I think is fantastic, would probably not have passed a design review under our current design standards and would have had to go to the Planning Commission for a variance or a design variance. So while that's the trouble with some of those kinds of standards, we need to make sure that there's enough flexibility built into that. The reason for that would be the colors, the black and white, and also the fact that it no longer has an awning, because the awning was taken off when they put the old facade up. And it's still, I think, dramatically better than what was there a few years ago. So that brings me to the next topic, which is design standards. That's the last piece of our downtown code rewrite, and I expect the RFP for that to go out next month, and we'll be working with a couple of different consultants to pick someone to reformat the code and put together the new drawings for us, and hope to have those in place early next year. So the project that was in the paper, Mr. Imus's project that he described, we have no permits in for that, no development requests at all. So that sounds really interesting and sounds great, but since it's not in-house, I don't think it's going to be finished by spring, because I don't think even if they had already started breaking ground on it, you'd be able to be done by spring, as it said in the paper. So really excited to find out more about that, but it is important to know that that's not currently an active project that we have in-house.
Michael, just a general question. The rules that are in place for various things in the city, if you have a single house somewhere in a building lot, how does that fit into the whole scheme of things? If you look back, and you see where they were able to make entrance to the place from the street rather than the alley and that kind of thing. How do you work around that where you have a single lot?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, we've got so much variation within the city central part that when developers or a builder wants to go in and do something, that how does he know that it's not grandfathered in, that kind of thing.
Right. So if it's a vacant property and they want to develop it, they need to develop according to the rules in place at the time that they bring in their application. And the rules may have changed. As an example, in this single-family one, the SF1 neighborhood we have, and the SF2 neighborhood we have, design standards that require certain roof pitches. And if you have an alley behind the property, it requires that you access your property from the rear. And that your driveway come from the back, not from the front. So that's to keep those neighborhoods from having garage doors be the most prominent thing in the neighborhood.
But I think
you may have your neighbor have a driveway from the front and a garage door in front, and you may come to us as the person wanting to build that house and say, why? I don't understand. How come that's the case? And there are options for variances, and there are ways to do that. There's also some flexibility for administrative interpretation of it being of them doing adequate things to comply with the code. Not everything is completely strict, but is that what you mean? The idea that, I mean, there are different standards in different places, and it is tough because rules evolve.
Yeah, it's kind of bothersome that you see one thing being built one way, and then the attempt to do something similar for some reason doesn't work. And I think that's what's frustrating for people.
Well, and sometimes it's as simple as just being across the street and then you're in a different zone. The other day, a gentleman was at the counter and he was talking about how the property that he owns right across the street from the Brickyard Cottages or Brickyard Terrace or Bayview Terrace property, the three-story homes, which received a variance for narrower side yard setbacks, it's in the residential office zone, which allows smaller properties, which allows more density, had different standards, and it also received a variance to be able to build effectively at that density. It was also platted many years ago. His property across the street is in a different zone. It has different density allowances. It has different side yard setbacks. And he's trying to grapple with, well, how come they got to do that? I'm over here. I can only build two houses on this big piece of property. So that can be it, too.
Yeah, it's just, something that comes up and we hear about it.
I'm sure you do. And it can be, like I say, it's oftentimes it's different rules in different places because we have different zones. But also it has to do with the fact that in some instances, we change the rules for things to become better. A long time ago, the garages were all off the alley. That's why we have all those old little garages and sheds in the neighborhoods. Then people switched to garages in front. Then people switched to two-car garages. Then people wanted three-car garages. And then people started going, whoa, now what I have in front of this house is a three-car garage sticking out, and the front door is 30 feet back further. And people decided that was a bad idea, so we went to garages in the back, please. It's a progression. And trust me, we hear it frequently, but I think everyone does in all cities hears about the challenges of evolving preferences.
But is there any chance that there can be exceptions because of what's happened in the past?
Absolutely. An example of that would be a property on the south end of Harris, the south end of 4th here. The last one in the SF1 zone, the very last property in the SF1 zone, it is backed up to by the motel property and the Chinese restaurant. And the gentleman who bought that property bought it so that he could have a pull-through garage, because he has a big boat. So that requires a garage on the front of the house, but it's in the SF1 zone. Garages aren't allowed on the front of the house. The way the code's written, it says you have to have access to your garage from the rear. Well, he's going to have access to the garage from the rear because it's a pull-through garage. And we said, well, that's not what we meant. And then we went through a design review and ultimately evaluated it and said, if you do these other things, and if your front driveway is a grasscrete driveway, meaning that it's a drivable grass surface, like with a concrete grid underneath the grass, we'll let you put a garage door in the front of that and have what you want for a variety of reasons. One, because it's on the edge of the neighborhood. One, because it's does actually meet the literal intent of the literal law where a garage door provided for the access in the back. And also because many of your neighbors right in this immediate area near you have garages on the front of their houses from when being grandfathered. And so that was an administrative option for that, which is built into our code. If I had said no, he could have appealed it. If I had decided it was still so different, he would have needed a variance. He could have gone to the Planning Commission for a design variance. So there are options at multiple levels there. But that's a perfect example of someone who got to do something that typically that code would not have allowed.
Well,
They do both in the city. They're probably more common in the center of the streets, but they do both. And you still, even sometimes the zone boundary is a property line, so it's not even across the street or across the alley. It's just right there, right immediately there. There's not even an inch of separation. So it's an inherent conflict or difficulty with setting a boundary. Is there will always be a place where it's different.
Is there any hope of making the boundaries generally along alleyways rather than along streets and property lines?
We do that when we're going through the processes. It would be a really significant amount of work, to the extent that I can hardly even describe it to you. It would also, in established neighborhoods, cause a phenomenal amount of public outcry. I would be burned in effigy in some neighborhoods, because people are that troubled by those kinds of changes.
Michael, on Seagrass, when are the outdoor building limitations?
Sorry?
On Seagrass, are there requirements that outdoor building be completed within certain periods of time?
Yeah, there's the limits in that area within certain distance of the shoreline are that outdoor construction is permitted outright until the end of October and is permitted provisionally until the end of November. And then there's some minimal flexibility after that we've extended to Marin and some of the others as they were trying to wrap things up and you know, just give them a little bit more flexibility based on ornithologists observing the behavior of the birds. And Seagrass developers are actually in the process of having a very, very reputable ornithologist out there monitoring now, because they need to get me a report before the end of October so I can decide if there is an impact that is too significant that we have to shut them down. I can tell you already, I talked with the ornithologist today, and based upon our experience with our project on Marine Drive, based upon our experience with the wastewater treatment plant and the road project on Marine Drive, and also with the Marin project, we will most likely, almost without question, give them approval to work throughout the month of November. And then if they need a little bit more time to wrap up some siding or put some windows on that side of the building, we'll probably still let them do that even afterwards, because it's been demonstrated time and time again in these past several years that the birds really don't care what you're doing up there. Don't walk down on the beach at lunchtime when you're a construction worker, and don't bring your dog to work. But if you're up on the beach working, they pretty much don't care. Which is not what we believed when we approved those projects a decade ago.
So November, end of November, sort of the...
It's really kind of, yeah, the SEPA still says the end of November. I have very little flexibility after that. I mean, like I said, if they were saying, you know, we just have these windows we need to get in and then it'll be wintered in, we would probably say go ahead and do it based on the science. But we have very limited flexibility. Now, they have submitted a revision for Seagrass to go from multiplexes, fourplexes, and things like that to mostly all duplexes. And in that, they've submitted a new SEPA environmental review. And I haven't had a chance to really get into it with them, but they may be submitting a new wildlife report. And they may say, you know, based upon what the information that's been developed, we'd like you to lift this waiver or to make it more flexible. And that could be possible, that the mitigation could change. But right now, they're subject to the SEPA that was approved, like I said, about a decade ago. Anything else?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, last on the agenda here, Mr. City Manager.
I have no report tonight.
Thank you, sir. Calendars?
A question.
Dave. Question.
Is the Economic Development Committee meeting on the 3rd?
On the 3rd? Yes.
Okay.
Any other
I'm
changes?
Sorry, I missed that.
The next economic development meeting is on the 3rd.
Are those published on our internet site? Or?
Yes.
They are. Okay. Okay. Any unfinished business? Any council new business? Yes, Paul.
We have a request or a suggestion from BTAC, I believe, to buy the Bank of America. How will that be dealt with?
They're going through a process where people that are, or entities that are interested in purchasing one of their facilities, they'd have to submit a bid, and there's a bid date, and I have the phone number, and I've left a couple of messages to get more information on that process.
Okay, by they, you mean Bank of America?
Bank of America, that's correct. Yeah.
That's that number that's posted?
It's a number I was given by an individual, so I'm assuming it would be the same.
Yeah, same there number. Is one posted on it.
You could buy that, Charlie.
When is... Do we know what the time frames are for that purchase? Or?
I believe sometime in December. December 18th or something like that.
So they
December 8th.
It'll be part of our budget discussion.
Okay. Okay.
So are they, do you get the sense that there is a possibility that the city could buy it or they would effectively... donate to the city?
Is I don't know about donating, but I would assume that,
or
yeah,
sell it
they
for
would be,
a dollar.
They would,
or, you know, whatever.
Certainly entertain
so
that interest.
That seems to be something they would consider.
I would imagine so.
Okay.
I think we.
Like,
would
have. To, I'd have to get more information.
Yeah.
Once I get a hold of somebody.
Right. Yeah. That's.
Where are their operations? Are they in Charlotte or something like that?
I don't recall. I believe they are somewhere. Headquartered somewhere back east.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Is there any other council new business? If not, we're going.
Oh. You have a question.
Raven, could you explain to us why we can't use the public restrooms from the sewer treatment plant, what the problem is for us so we can't use them for that new playground?
Yes, I can. So when the wastewater treatment plant was constructed, it was decided to use reclaimed water in the restrooms. And unfortunately, our permit for the reclaimed water requires that we stop sending water to the outfall on October 1st. So that limits our ability. There was some mechanisms for changing those bathrooms to potable, you know, like a valve or something, but unfortunately that same valve is connected to the process water in the plant, and so it would negatively affect the plant. So there are very likely other methodologies for getting potable water to the toilets adjacent to the park, but none of them are at zero cost. And then there's the matter of, you know, can the parks fund afford the water? So it was recommended just for the opening and also possibly for the short term moving forward that the Santa can be placed outside, which is what the city of Bellingham does in every one of their parks in the winter because they want to keep the water turned off. That is another issue too. We actually have a little bit of an issue keeping the women's bathroom above freezing. I don't quite understand why those heaters don't work, but also keeping in mind that there is a restroom across the street and at the port. So that's a long-winded answer to your question.
Any other questions? If not, we're going to now break for executive session. Breaking at 7:08 to discuss bargaining pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period 140 four in brackets and sale of real estate pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period 110 one in brackets C in brackets. How long do we anticipate we'll be out for executive session? We will be in executive session for approximately 1 hour. And do we anticipate any action being taken? And we do not anticipate any action being taken. Anyone in the audience is welcome to wait until we return. If you have more interesting things to do, you may go about doing them.